awareness of the structure of the great hall itself, he became aware, without surprise and without distress, that the entire expanse of vaulted ceiling above his head was actually a storage hive, filled with combat droids. Which made him also aware, again without surprise and without distress, that he would very likely die here. Contemplation of death brought only one slight sting of regret, and more than a bit of puzzlement. Until this very moment, he had never realized he'd always expected, for no discernible reason, that when he died, Anakin would be with him. How curious, he thought. And then he turned his mind to business. Anakin had a feeling Master Windu was going to be disappointed. Palpatine had hardly reacted at all. The Supreme Chancellor of the Republic sat at the small desk in his private office, staring distractedly at an abstract twist of Nuranium that Anakin had always assumed was supposed to be some kind of sculpture, and merely sighed, as though he had matters of much greater importance on his mind. "I'm sorry, sir," Anakin said, shifting his weight in front of Palpatine's desk. "Perhaps you didn't hear me. Obi-Wan has made contact with General Grievous. His attack is already underway. They're fighting right now, sir." "Yes, yes, of course, Anakin. Yes, quite." Palpatine still looked as if he was barely paying attention. "I entirely understand your concern for your friend. Let us hope he is up to the task." "It's not just concern for Obi-Wan, sir. Taking General Grievous will be the final victory for the Republic." "Will it?" He turned to Anakin, and a distinctly troubled frown chased the distraction from his face. "I'm afraid, my boy, that our situation is a great deal more grave than even I had feared. Perhaps you should sit down." Anakin didn't move.
"What do you mean?"
"Grievous is no longer the real enemy. Even the Clone Wars themselves are now only a distraction."
"What?"
"The Council is about to make its move," Palpatine said, grim and certain. "If we don't stop them by this time tomorrow, the Jedi may very well have taken over the Republic."
Anakin burst into astonished laughter. "But, sir, please, you can't possibly believe that."
"Anakin, I know. I will be the first to be arrested, the first to be executed, but I will be far from the last."
Anakin could only shake his head in disbelief. "Sir, I know that the Council and you have disagreements, but
this is far beyond any personal dispute between me and the members of the Council. This is a plot generations in the making, a plot to take over the Republic itself."
"Anakin, think.
You know they don't trust you. They never have. You know they have been keeping things from you. You know they have made plans behind your back. You know that even your great friend Obi-Wan has not told you what their true intentions are. It's because you're not like them, Anakin. You're a man, not just a Jedi."
Anakin's head drew down toward his shoulders as though he found himself under enemy fire.
"I don't... They wouldn't..." "Ask yourself, why did they send you to me with this news? Why? Why not simply notify me through normal channels?"
"And take careful note of his reaction. We will need a full account."
"Sir, I...
"No need to fumble for an explanation," Palpatine said gently. "You've already as much as admitted they've ordered you to spy upon me. Don't you understand that anything you tell them tonight, whatever it may be, will be used as an excuse to order my execution?"
"That's impossible." Anakin sought desperately for an argument. The Senate would never allow it."
"The Senate will be powerless to stop it. I told you this is bigger than any personal dislike between the Council and myself. I am only one man, Anakin. My authority is granted by the Senate. It is the Senate that is the true government of the Republic. Killing me is nothing. To control the Republic, the Jedi will have to take over the Senate
first. But the Jedi serve the Senate.
Do they? Palpatine asked mildly. Or do they serve certain senators?
This is all... I'm sorry, Chancellor, please, you have to understand how this sounds.
Here. The Chancellor rummaged around within his desk for a moment, then brought forth a document reader.
Do you know what this is?
Anakin recognized the seal Padme had placed on it.
Yes, sir. That's the petition of the 2000... No, Anakin! No!
Palpatine slammed the document reader on his desktop, hard enough to make Anakin jump.
It is a roll of traitors.
Anakin went absolutely still.
What? There are now only two kinds of senators in our government, Anakin. Those whose names are on this so-called petition, Palpatine said, and those whom the Jedi are about to arrest.
Anakin could only stare. He couldn't argue. He couldn't even make himself disbelieve. He had only one thought. Padme? How much trouble was she in?
Didn't I warn you, Anakin? Didn't I tell you what Obi-Wan was up to? Why do you think he was meeting with the leaders of this delegation behind your back?
But, sir, please. Surely, all they asked for is an end to the war. It's what the Jedi want, too. I mean, it's what we all want, isn't it?
Perhaps. Though how that end comes about may be the single most important thing about the war. More important, even, than who wins.
Oh, Padme. Anakin moaned inside his head. Padme, what have you gotten yourself into?
Their sincerity may be much to be admired, Palpatine said. Or it would be, were it not that there was much more to that meeting than met the eye.
Anakin frowned. What do you mean?
Their petition was nothing of the sort. It was, in fact, a not-so-veiled threat.
Palpatine sighed regretfully.
It was a show of force, Anakin. A demonstration of the political power the Jedi will be able to muster in support of their rebellion.
Anakin blinked. But surely... He stammered, rounding Palpatine's desk. Surely Senator Amidala at least can be trusted.
I understand how badly you need to believe that, the Chancellor said. But Senator Amidala is hiding something. Surely you sensed it.
If she is... Anakin swayed. The floor seemed to be tilting under his feet like the deck of invisible hand.
Even if she is, he said, his voice flat, over-controlled, it doesn't mean that what she is hiding is treason.
Palpatine's brows drew together.
I'm surprised your Jedi insights are not more sensitive to such things.
I simply don't sense betrayal in Senator Amidala, Anakin insisted. Palpatine leaned back in his chair, steepling his fingers, studying Anakin skeptically.
Yes, you do, he said after a moment, though you don't want to admit it. Perhaps it is because neither you nor she yet understands that by betraying me, she is also betraying you.
She couldn't. Anakin pressed a hand to his forehead. His dizziness was getting worse. When had he last eaten? He couldn't remember. It might have been before the last time he'd slept. She could never.
Of course she could, Palpatine said. That is the nature of politics, my boy. Don't take it too personally. It doesn't mean the two of you can't be happy together.
What? The room seemed to darken around him. What do you mean?
Please, Anakin. Are we not past the point of playing childish games with one another?
I know.
Do you understand? I have always known. I have pretended ignorance only to spare you discomfort.
Anakin had to lean on the desk. What? What do you know?
Anakin, Padme was my queen. I was her ambassador to the Senate. Naboo is my home. You of all people know how I value loyalty and friendship. Do you think I have no friends among the civil clergy in Theed? Your secret ceremony
has never been secret. Not from me, at any rate. I have always been very happy for you both.
You?
Words whirled through Anakin's mind, and none of them made sense.
But if she's going to betray us...
That, my boy, Palpatine said, is entirely up to you. The fog inside Anakin's head seemed to solidify into a long, dark tunnel. The point of light at the end was Palpatine's face.
I don't understand.
Oh, yes, that's very clear. The Chancellor's voice seemed to be coming from very far away. Please sit, my boy. You're looking rather unwell. May I offer you something to drink?
No, I'm all right.
Anakin sank gratefully into a dangerously comfortable chair.
I'm just a little tired, that's all.
Not sleeping well?
No.
Anakin offered an exhausted chuckle. I haven't been sleeping well for a few years now.
I quite understand, my boy. Quite.
Palpatine rose and rounded his desk, sitting casually on its front edge. Anakin, we must stop pretending. The final crisis is approaching, and our only hope to survive it is to be completely, absolutely, ruthlessly honest with each other, and with ourselves. You must understand that what is at stake here is nothing less than the fate of the galaxy.
I don't know.
Don't be afraid, Anakin. What is said between us here need never pass beyond these walls.
Anakin, think. Think how hard it has been to hold all your secrets inside.
Have you ever needed to keep a secret from me? He ticked his fingers one by one. I have kept the secret of your marriage all these years. The slaughter at the Tusken camp, you shared with me. I was there when you executed Count Dooku. And I know where you got the power to defeat him. You see? You have never needed to pretend with me the way you must with your Jedi comrades. Do you understand that you need never hide anything from me? That I accept you exactly as you are? He spread his hands as though offering a hug.
Share with me the truth, your absolute truth. Let yourself out, Anakin.
Anakin shook his head. How many times had he dreamed of not having to pretend to be the perfect Jedi? But what else could he be?
I wouldn't even know how to begin.
It's quite simple in the end. Tell me what you want.
Anakin squinted up at him. I don't understand.
Of course you don't. The last of the sunset haloed his ice-white hair and threw his face into shadow.
You've been trained to never think about that. The Jedi never ask what you want. They simply tell you what you're supposed to want. They never give you a choice at all. That's why they take their students, their victims, at an age so young that choice is meaningless. By the time a Padawan is old enough to choose, he has been so indoctrinated, so brainwashed, that he is incapable of even considering the question. But you're different, Anakin. You had a real life outside the Jedi Temple. You can break through the fog of lies the Jedi have pumped into your brain. I ask you again, what do you want?
I still don't understand.
I am offering you anything, Palpatine said. Ask, and it is yours. A glass of water, it's yours. A bag full of Karuska gems, yours. Look out the window behind me, Anakin. Pick something. And it's yours.
Is this some kind of joke?
The time for jokes is past, Anakin. I have never been more serious.
Within the shadow that cloaked Palpatine's face, Anakin could only just see the twin gleams of the Chancellor's eyes.
Pick something.
Anything.
All right. Shrugging, frowning, still not understanding, Anakin looked out the window, looking for the most ridiculously expensive thing he could spot.
How about one of those new Sorrow sub-custom speeders?
Done.
Are you serious? You know how much one of those costs? You could practically outfit a battle cruiser.
Would you prefer a battle cruiser?
Anakin went still. A cold void opened in his chest. In a small, cautious voice, he said, "How about the senatorial apartments?"
"The private apartment?"
Anakin shook his head, staring up at the twin gleams in the darkness on Palpatine's face. "The whole building." Palpatine did not so much as blink.
"Done.
It's privately owned. Not anymore.
You can't just..."
"Yes, I can. It's yours. Is there anything else? Name it." Anakin gazed blankly out into the gathering darkness. Stars began to shimmer through the haze of twilight. A constellation he recognized hung above the spires of the Jedi Temple. "All right," Anakin said softly. "Corellia. I'll take Corellia."
"The planet or the whole system?"
Anakin stared.
"Anakin?"
"I just..." He shook his head blankly. "I can't figure out if you're kidding or completely insane."
"I am neither, Anakin. I am trying to impress upon you a fundamental truth of our relationship. A fundamental truth of yourself."
"What if I really wanted the Corellian system? The whole Five Brothers, all of it?"
"Then it would be yours. You can have the whole sector if you like."
The twin gleams within the shadows sharpened.
"Do you understand now? I will give you anything you want."
The concept left him dizzy. "What if I wanted? What if I went along with Padme and her friends? What if I want the war to end?
Would tomorrow be too soon?"
"How?" Anakin couldn't seem to get his breath. "How can you do that?"
"Right now, we are only discussing what. How is a different issue. We'll come to that presently."
Anakin sank deeper into the chair while he let everything sink deeper into his brain. If only his head would stop spinning. Why did Palpatine have to start all this now? This would all be easier to comprehend if the nightmares of Padme didn't keep screaming inside his head. "And in exchange," he asked finally, "what do I have to do?"
"You have to do what you want."
"What I want?"
"Yes, Anakin. Yes, exactly that. Only that. Do the one thing that the Jedi fear most. Make up your own mind. Follow your own conscience. Do what you think is right. I know that you have been longing for a life greater than that of an ordinary Jedi. Commit to that life. I know you burn for greater power than any Jedi can wield. Give yourself permission to gain that power and allow yourself license to use it. You have dreamed of leaving the Jedi Order, having a family of your own, one that is based on love, not on enforced rules of self-denial."
I can't just leave."
"But you can."
Anakin couldn't breathe. He couldn't blink. He sat frozen. Even thought was impossible.
"You can have every one of your dreams. Turn aside from the lies of the Jedi and follow the truth of yourself. Leave them. Join me on the path of true power. Be my friend, Anakin. Be my student. My apprentice."
Anakin's vision tunneled again, but this time there was no light at the far end. He pulled back his hand, and it was shaking as he brought it up to support his face. "I'm sorry," he said. "I'm sorry, but as much as I want those things, as much as I care for you, sir, I can't. I just can't. Not yet. Because there's only one thing I really want right now. Everything else will just have to wait."
"I know what you truly want," the shadow said. "I have only been waiting for you to admit it to yourself."
A hand, a human hand, warm with compassion, settled onto his shoulder.
"Listen to me. I can help you save her."
"You?" Anakin blinked blindly. "How can you help?"
"Do you remember that myth I told you of? The tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?"
The shadow whispered. "The myth."
"Directly influenced the midichlorians to create life. With such knowledge, to maintain life in someone already living,
would seem a small matter.
Yes, Anakin said. Yes, I remember.
The shadow leaned so close that it seemed to fill the world.
Anakin, it's no mere myth.
Anakin swallowed.
Darth Plagueis was real.
Anakin could force out only a strangled whisper.
Real?
Darth Plagueis was my master. He taught me the key to his power, the shadow said, dryly matter-of-fact, before I killed him.
Without understanding how he had moved, without even intending to move, without any transition of realization or dawning understanding, Anakin found himself on his feet. A blue bar of sizzling energy terminated a centimeter from Palpatine's chin, its glow casting red-edged shadows up his face and across the ceiling. Only gradually did Anakin come to understand that this was his lightsaber, and that it was in his hand.
You, he said.
Suddenly, he was neither dizzy nor tired.
Suddenly, everything made sense. It's you. It's been you all along.
In the clean blue light of his blade, he stared into the face of a man whose features were as familiar to him as his own, but now seemed as alien as an extragalactic comet. Because now, he finally understood that those familiar features were only a mask. He had never seen this man's real face.
I should kill you, he said.
I will kill you.
Palpatine gave him that wise, kindly uncle smile Anakin had been seeing since the age of 9.
For what?
You're a Sith Lord.
I am, he said simply. I am also your friend.
The blue bar of energy wavered, just a bit.
I am also the man who has always been here for you. I am the man you have never needed to lie to. I am the man who wants nothing from you but that you follow your conscience. If that conscience requires you to commit murder simply over a philosophical difference, I will not resist.
His hands opened, still at his sides.
Anakin, when I told you that you can have anything you want, did you think I was excluding my life?
The floor seemed to soften beneath Anakin's feet, and the room started to swirl darkness and ooze confusion.
You won't even fight?
Fight you?
In the blue glow that cast shadows up from Palpatine's chin, the Chancellor looked astonished that he would suggest such a thing.
But what will happen when you kill me? What will happen to the Republic?
His tone was gently reasonable.
What will happen to Padme?
Padme.
Her name was a gasp of anguish.
When I die,
Palpatine said, with the air of a man reminding a child of something he ought to already know,
my knowledge dies with me.
The sizzling blade trembled.
Unless, that is, I have the opportunity to teach it to my apprentice.
His vision swam. A whisper of naked pain and despair.
I don't know what to do.
Palpatine gazed upon him, loving and gentle as he had ever been, though only a whisker shy of a lightsaber's terminal curve. And what if this face was not a mask? What if the true face of the Sith was exactly what he saw before him? A man who had cared for him, had helped him, had been his loyal friend when he'd thought he'd had no other. What then?
Anakin, Palpatine said kindly, let's talk.
The four bodyguard droids spread out in a shallow arc between Obi-Wan and Grievous, raising their electrostaffs. Obi-Wan stopped a respectful distance away. He still carried bruises from one of those electrostaffs, and he felt no particular urge to add to his collection. General Grievous, he said, you're under arrest. The bio-droid general stalked toward him, passing through his screen of bodyguards without the slightest hint of reluctance.
Kenobi, don't tell me. Let me guess. This is the part where you give me the chance to surrender.
It can be, Obi-Wan allowed equably. Or, if you like, it can be the part where I dismantle your exoskeleton and ship you back to Coruscant in a cargo hopper.
I'll take option three.
Grievous lifted his hand, and the bodyguards moved to box Obi-Wan between them.
That's the one where I watch you die.
Another gesture, and the droids in the ceiling hive came to life. They uncoiled from their sockets, heads downward, with a rising chorus of whirring and buzzing and clicking that thickened until Obi-Wan might as well have stumbled into a colony of Corellian raptor wasps. They began to drop free of the ceiling, first only a few, then many, like the opening drops of a summer cloudburst. Finally, they fell in a downpour that shook the stone-mounted durasteel of the deck and left Obi-Wan's ears ringing. Hundreds of them landed and rolled to standing. As many more stayed attached to the overhead hive, hanging upside down by their magnapeds, weapons trained so that Obi-Wan now stood at the focus of a dome of blasters. Through it all, Obi-Wan never moved. "I'm sorry, was I not clear?" he said. "There is no option three." Grievous shook his head.
"Do you never tire of this pathetic banter?"
"I rarely tire at all," Obi-Wan said mildly. "And I have no better way to pass the time while I wait for you to either decide to surrender or choose to die."
"That choice was made long before I ever met you."
Grievous turned away.
"Kill him."
Instantly, the box of bodyguards around Obi-Wan filled with crackling electrostaffs, whipping faster than the human eye could see, which was less troublesome than it might have been, for that box was already empty of Jedi. The Force had let him collapse as though he'd suddenly fainted. Then it brought his lightsaber from his belt to his hand and ignited it while he turned his fall into a roll. That roll carried his lightsaber through a crisp arc that severed the leg of one of the bodyguards. And as the Force brought Obi-Wan back to his feet, the Force also nudged the crippled bodyguard to topple sideways into the path of the blade and sent it clanging to the floor in two smoking, sparking pieces. One down. The remaining three pressed the attack, but more cautiously. Their weapons were longer than his, and they struck from beyond the reach of his blade. He gave way before them, his defensive velocities barely keeping their crackling discharge blades at bay. Three Magna Guards, each with a double-ended weapon that generated an energy field impervious to lightsabers. Each with reflexes that operated near light speed. Each with hyper-sophisticated heuristic combat algorithms that enabled it to learn from experience and adapt its tactics instantly to any situation, were certainly beyond Obi-Wan's ability to defeat. But it was not Obi-Wan who would defeat them. Obi-Wan wasn't even fighting. He was only a vessel emptied of self. The Force, shaped by his skill and guided by his clarity of mind, fought through him. In the Force, he felt their destruction. It was somewhere above and behind him, and only seconds away. He went to meet it with a backflipping leap that the Force used to lift him neatly to an empty droid socket in the ceiling hive. The Magna Guard sprang after him, but he was gone by the time they arrived, leaping higher into the maze of girders and cables and room-sized cargo containers that was the control center superstructure. "Here," said the Force within him. And Obi-Wan stopped, balancing on a girder, frowning back at the oncoming killer droids that leapt from beam to beam below him like malevolent durasteel primates. Though he could feel its close approach, he had no idea from where the destruction might come until the Force showed him a support beam within reach of his blade and whispered,
Now.
His blade flicked out, and the durasteel beam parted, fresh-cut edges glowing white-hot, and a great hulk of ship-sized cargo container that the beam had been supporting tore free of its other supports with shrieks of anguished metal and crashed down upon all three Magna Guards with the finality of a meteor strike. 2, 3, and 4. Oh, thought Obi-Wan, with detached approval. That worked out rather well. Only 10,000 to go, give or take. An instant later, the Force had him hurtling through a storm of blaster fire as every combat droid in the control center opened up on him at once. Letting go of intention, letting go of desire, letting go of life, Obi-Wan fixed his entire attention on a thread of the Force that pulled him toward Grievous. Not where Grievous was, but where Grievous would be when Obi-Wan got there. Leaping girder to girder, slashing cables on which to swing through swarms of ricocheting particle beams, blade flickering so fast it became a deflector shield that splattered blaster bolts in all directions, his presence alone became a weapon. As he spun and whirled through the control center superstructure, the blasts of particle cannons from power droids destroyed equipment and shattered girders and unleashed a torrent of red-hot debris that crashed to the deck, crushing droids on all sides. By the time he flipped down through the air to land cat-footed on the deck once more, nearly half the droids between him and Grievous had been destroyed by their own not-so-friendly fire. He cut his way into the mob of remaining troops as smoothly as if it were no more than a canebrake near some sunlit beach. His steady pace left behind a trail of smoking slices of droid.
Keep firing!
Grievous roared to the spider droids that flanked him.
Blast him!
Obi-Wan felt the massive shoulder cannon of a spider droid track him, and he felt it fire a bolt as powerful as a proton grenade. And he let the Force nudge him into a leap that carried him just far enough toward the fringe of the bolt's blast radius so that instead of shattering his bones, it merely gave him a very strong, very hot push that sent him whirling over the rest of the droids to land directly in front of Grievous. A single slash of his lightsaber amputated the shoulder cannon of one power droid and continued into a spinning force-assisted kick that brought his boot heel to the point of the other power droid's duranium chin, snapping the droid's head back hard enough to sever its cervical sensor cables. Blind and deaf, the power droid could only continue to obey its last order. It staggered in a wild circle, its convulsively firing cannon blasting random holes in droids and walls alike, until Obi-Wan deactivated it with a precise thrust that burned a thumb-sized hole through its thoracic brain case. General, Obi-Wan said, with a blandly polite smile, as though unexpectedly greeting, on the street, someone he privately disliked. My offer is still open. Droid guns throughout the control center fell silent. Obi-Wan stood so close to Grievous that the general was in the line of fire. Grievous threw back his cloak imperiously.
Do you believe that I would surrender to you now?
I am still willing to take you alive. Obi-Wan's nod took in the smoking, sparking wreckage that filled the control center. So far, no one has been hurt. Grievous tilted his head so that he could squint down into Obi-Wan's face.
I have thousands of troops. You cannot defeat them all.
I don't have to.
This is your chance to surrender, General Kenobi.
Grievous swept a duranium hand toward the sinkhole city behind him.
Pow City is in my grip. Lay down your blade, or I will squeeze until this entire sinkhole brims over with innocent blood.
That's not what it's about to brim with, Obi-Wan said. You should pay more attention to the weather. Yellow eyes narrowed behind the mask of armor plast.
What?
Have a look outside. He pointed his lightsaber toward the archway. It's about to start raining clones. Grievous said again, turning to look.
What?
A shadow had passed over the sun, as though one of the towering thunderheads on the horizon had caught a stray current in the hyperwinds and settled above Pow City. But it wasn't a cloud. It was the Vigilance. While twilight enfolded the sinkhole, over the bright desert, above assault craft, skimmed the dunes in a tightening ring centered on the city. Hailfire droids rolled out from caves in the wind-scoured mesas, unleashing firestorms of missiles toward the oncoming craft for exactly 2.5 seconds apiece, which is how long it took for the Vigilance's sensor operators to transfer data to its turbolaser batteries. Thunderbolts roared down through the atmosphere, and hailfire droids disintegrated. Pinpoint counterfire from the bubble turrets of lat-eyes met missiles in blossoming fireballs that were ripped to shreds of smoke as the oncoming craft blasted through them. Lat-eyes streaked over the rim of the sinkhole and spiraled downward with all guns blazing, crabbing outward to keep their forward batteries raking on the sinkhole's wall, while at the rim above, Jadthu-class armored landers hovered with bay doors wide, trailing sprays of polyplast cables like immense ice-white tassels that looped all the way to the ocean mouths that gaped at the lowest level of the city. Down those tassels, rappelling so fast they seemed to be simply falling, came endless streams of armored troopers already firing on the combat droids that marched out to meet them. Streamers of cables brushed the outer balcony of the control center, and down them slid white armored troopers, each with one hand on his mechanized line break and the other full of DC-15 blaster rifle on full auto, spraying continuous chains of packeted particle beams. Droids wheeled and dropped and leapt into the air and burst to fragments. Surviving droids opened up on the clones as though grateful for something to shoot at, blasting holes in armor, cooking flesh with superheated steam from deep tissue hits, blowing some troopers entirely off their cables to tumble toward a messy final landing 10 levels below. When the survivors of the first wave of clones hit the deck, the next wave was right behind them. Grievous turned back to Obi-Wan. He lowered his head like an angry bantha, yellow glare fixed on the Jedi Master.
To the death, then.
Obi-Wan sighed. If you insist. The bio-droid general cast back his cloak, revealing the 4 lightsabers pocketed there. He stepped back, spreading wide his duranium arms.
You will not be the first Jedi I have killed, nor will you be the last.
Obi-Wan's only reply was to subtly shift the angle of his lightsaber up and forward. The general's widespread arms now split along their lengths, dividing in half. Even his hands split in half. Now, he had 4 arms and 4 hands, and each hand took a lightsaber as his cloak dropped to the floor. They snarled to life, and Grievous spun all 4 of them in a flourishing velocity so fast and so seamlessly integrated that he seemed to stand within a pulsing sphere of blue and green energy.
Come on, then, Kenobi. Come for me. I have been trained in your Jedi arts by Lord Tyrannus himself.
Do you mean Count Dooku? What a curious coincidence, Obi-Wan said, with a deceptively pleasant smile. I trained the man who killed him. With a convulsive snarl, Grievous lunged. The sphere of blue lightsaber energy around him bulged toward Obi-Wan and opened like a mouth to bite him in half. Obi-Wan stood his ground, his blade still. Chain lightning teeth closed upon him. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker right now. You don't remember putting away your lightsaber. You don't remember moving from Palpatine's private office to his larger public one. You don't remember collapsing in the chair where you now sit. Nor do you remember drinking water from the half-empty glass that you find in your mechanical hand. You remember only that the last man in the galaxy you still thought you could trust has been lying to you since the day you met. And you're not even angry about it. Only stunned. After all, Anakin, you are the last man who has a right to be angry at someone for keeping a secret. What else was I to do? Palpatine sits in his familiar tall oval chair behind his familiar desk. The lamp discs are full on, the office eerily bright. Ordinary. As though this is merely another one of your friendly conversations, the casual evening chats you've enjoyed together for so many years. As though nothing has happened. As though nothing has changed. Corruption has made the Republic a cancer in the body of the galaxy, and no one could burn it out. Not the judicials, not the Senate, not even the Jedi Order itself. I was the only man strong and skilled enough for this task. I was the only man who dared even attempt it. Without my small deception, how should I have cured the Republic? Had I revealed myself to you or to anyone else, the Jedi would have hunted me down and murdered me without trial, very much as you nearly did only a moment ago. You can't argue. Words are beyond you. He rises, moving around his desk, taking one of the small chairs and drawing it close to yours. If only you could know how I have longed to tell you, Anakin. All these years, since the very day we met, my boy, I have watched over you, waiting as you grew in strength and wisdom, biding my time until now, today, when you are finally ready to understand who you truly are and your true place in the history of the galaxy. Numb words blur from your numb lips. The Chosen One. Exactly, my boy. Exactly. You are the Chosen One. He leans toward you, eyes clear, steady, utterly honest. Chosen by me. He turns a hand toward the panorama of light-sprayed cityscape through the window behind his desk. Look out there, Anakin. A trillion beings on this planet alone. In the galaxy as a whole, uncounted quadrillions. And of them all, I have chosen you, Anakin Skywalker, to be the heir to my power. To all that I am. But that's not the prophecy. That's not the prophecy of the Chosen One. Is this such a problem for you? Is not your quest to find a way to overturn prophecy? Palpatine leaned close, smiling, warm and kindly. Anakin, do you think the Sith did not know of this prophecy? Do you think we would simply sleep while it came to pass? You mean, this is what you must understand. This Jedi submission to fate. This is not the way of the Sith, Anakin. This is not my way. This is not your way. It has never been. It need never be. You're drowning. I am not, you hear yourself say, on your side. I am not evil. Who said anything about evil? I am bringing peace to the galaxy. Is that evil? I am offering you the power to save Padme. Is that evil? Have I attacked you? Drugged you? Are you being tortured? My boy, I am asking you. I am asking you to do the right thing. Turn your back on treason. On all those who would harm the Republic. I'm asking you to do exactly what you have sworn to do. Bring peace and justice to the galaxy. And save Padme, of course. Haven't you sworn to protect her, too?
Words will not fit themselves into the answers you need. If only Obi-Wan were here. Obi-Wan would know what to say. What to do. Obi-Wan could handle this. Right now, you know you can't.
I'll turn you over to the Jedi Council. They'll know what to do.
I'm sure they will. They are already planning to overthrow the Republic. You'll give them exactly the excuse they're looking for. And when they come to execute me, will that be justice? Will they be bringing peace?
They won't. They wouldn't.
Well, of course, I hope you're correct, Anakin. You'll forgive me if I don't share your blind loyalty to your comrades. I suppose it does indeed come down, in the end, to a question of loyalty, he said thoughtfully. That's what you must ask yourself, my boy. Whether your loyalty is to the Jedi
or to the Republic. It's not like that. Palpatine lifted his shoulders. Perhaps not. Perhaps it's simply a question of whether you love Obi-Wan Kenobi more than you love your wife. There is no more searching for words. There are no longer words at all. Take your time. Meditate on it. I will still be here when you decide. Inside your head, there is only fire. Around your heart, the dragon whispers that all things die. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker right now. There is an understated elegance in Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber technique, one that is quite unlike the feel one might get from the other great swords beings of the Jedi Order. He lacks entirely the flash, the pure bold elan of an Anakin Skywalker. There is nowhere in him the penumbral ferocity of a Mace Windu or a Deepa Bilaba, nor the stylish grace of a Shakti or a Dooku, and he is nothing resembling the whirlwind of destruction that Yoda can become. He is simplicity itself. That is his power. Before Obi-Wan had left Coruscant, Mace Windu had told him of facing Grievous in single combat atop a maglev train during the General's daring raid to capture Palpatine. Mace had told him how the computers, slaved to Grievous's brain, had apparently analyzed even Mace's unconventionally lethal Vapad, and had been able to respond in kind after a single exchange.
"He must have been trained by Count Dooku," Mace had said. "So you can expect Makashi as well. Given the number of Jedi he has fought and slain, you must expect that he can attack in any style, or all of them. In fact, Obi-Wan, I believe that of all living Jedi, you have the best chance to defeat him."
This pronouncement had startled Obi-Wan, and he had protested. After all, the only form in which he was truly even proficient was Sarisu, which was the most common lightsaber form in the Jedi Order. Founded upon the basic deflection principles all Padawans were taught, to enable them to protect themselves from blaster bolts, Sarisu was very simple, and so restrained and defense-oriented that it was very nearly downright passive. "But surely, Master Windu," Obi-Wan had said, "you with the power of Vapad, or Yoda's mastery of Ataro." Mace Windu had almost smiled.
"I created Vapad to answer my weakness. It channels my own darkness into a weapon of the light. Master Yoda's Ataro is also an answer to weakness, the limitations of reach and mobility imposed by his stature and his age. But for you, what weakness does Sarisu answer?"
Blinking, Obi-Wan had been forced to admit he'd never actually thought of it that way.
"That is so like you, Master Kenobi," the Corran Master had said, shaking his head. "I am called a great swordsman because I invented a lethal style. But who is greater, the creator of a killing form or the master of the classic form?"
"I'm very flattered that you would consider me a master, but really..."
"Not a master, the master," Mace had said. "Be who you are, and Grievous will never defeat you."
So now, facing the tornado of annihilating energy that is Grievous's attack, Obi-Wan simply is who he is.
The electro drivers powering Grievous' mechanical arms let each of the four attack thrice in a single second. Integrated by combat algorithms in the BioDroid's electronic network of peripheral processors, each of the 12 strikes per second came from a different angle with different speed and intensity. An unpredictably broken rhythm of slashes, chops, and stabs, of which every single one could take Obi-Wan's life. Not one touched him. After all, he had often walked unscathed through hornet swarms of blaster fire, defended only by the force's direction of his blade. Countering 12 blows per second was only difficult, not impossible.
His blade wove an intricate web of angles and curves, never truly fast, but always just fast enough. Each motion of his lightsaber subtly interfering with 3 or 4 or 8 of the general's strikes, the rest sizzling past him, his precise, minimal shifts of weight and stance slipping them by centimeters. Grievous, snarling fury ramped up the intensity and velocity of his attacks, 16 per second, 18, until finally, at 20 strikes per second, he overloaded Obi-Wan's defense. So Obi-Wan used his defense to attack. A subtle shift in the angle of a single parry brought Obi-Wan's blade in contact not with the blade of the oncoming lightsaber, but with the hand grip. Slice. The blade winked out of existence a hairbreadth before it would have burned through Obi-Wan's forehead. Half the severed lightsaber skittered away, along with the Duranian thumb and first finger of the hand that had held it. Grievous paused, eyes pulsing wide, then drawing narrow. He lifted his maimed hand and stared at the white-hot stumps that held now only half a useless lightsaber. Obi-Wan smiled at him. Grievous lunged. Obi-Wan parried. Pieces of lightsabers bounced on the durasteel deck. Grievous looked down at the blade-sliced hunks of metal that were all he had left in his hands, then up at Obi-Wan's shining sky-colored blade, then down at his hands again. And then he seemed to suddenly remember that he had an urgent appointment somewhere else. Anywhere else. Obi-Wan stepped toward him, but a shot from the Force made him leap back, just as a scarlet HE bolt struck the floor right where he'd been about to place his foot. Obi-Wan rode the explosion, flipping in the air to land upright between a pair of super battle droids that were busily firing upon the flank of a squad of clone troopers, which they continued to do until they found themselves falling in pieces to the deck. Obi-Wan spun. In the chaos of exploding droids and dying men, Grievous was nowhere to be seen. Obi-Wan waved his lightsaber at the clones. "The General!" he shouted. "Which way?" One trooper circled his arm as though throwing a proton grenade back toward the archway where Obi-Wan had first entered. He followed the gesture and saw, for an instant in the sun shadow of the vigilance outside, the back curves of twin-bladed rings gang together to make a wheel the size of a starfighter, rolling swiftly off along the sinkhole rim. General Grievous was very good at running away. "Not this time," Obi-Wan muttered, and cut a path through the tangled mob of droids all the way to the arch in a single sustained surge, reaching the open air just in time to see the blade wheeler turn. It was an open ring with a pilot's chair inside, and in the pilot's chair sat Grievous, who lifted one of his bodyguard's electrostaffs in a sardonic wave as he took the scooter straight out over the edge. 4 claw-footed arms deployed, digging into the rock to carry him down the side of the sinkhole, angling away at a steep slant. Blast! Obi-Wan looked around. Still no air taxis. Not that he had any real interest in flying through the storm of battle that raged throughout the interior of the sinkhole, but there was certainly no way he could catch Grievous on foot. From around the corner of an interior tunnel, he heard a resonant honk, as though a nearby bantha had swallowed an air horn. He said, "Boga?" The beaked face of the dragon mount slowly extended around the interior angle of the tunnel. "Boga! Come here, girl! We have a general to catch." Boga fixed him with a reproachful glare. "Oh, very well." Obi-Wan rolled his eyes. "I was wrong, you were right. Can we please go now?" The remaining 15 meters of dragon mount hove into view and came trotting out to meet him. Obi-Wan sprang to the saddle, and Boga leapt to the sinkhole's rim in a single bound. Her huge head swung low, searching, until Obi-Wan spotted Grievous's blade wheeler racing away toward the landing decks below. "There, girl! That's him! Go!" Boga gathered herself and sprang to the rim of the next level down, poised for an instant to get her bearings, then leapt again down into the firestorm that Pow City had become. Obi-Wan spun his blade in a continuous whirl to either side of the Dragon Mount's back, disintegrating shrapnel and slapping away stray blaster fire. They plummeted through the sinkhole city, gaining tens of meters on Grievous with every leap. On one of the landing decks, the canopy was lifting and parting to show a small, ultra-fast armored shuttle of the type favored by the famously nervous Nymodian executives of the Trade Federation. Grievous's wheeler sprayed a fan of white-hot sparks as it tore across the landing deck. The biodroid whipped the wheeler sideways, laying it down for a skidding halt that showered the shuttle with molten durasteel. But before he could clamber out of the pilot's chair, several metric tons of Jedi-bearing dragon mount landed on the shuttle's roof, crouched and threatening and hissing venomously down at him. "I hope you have another vehicle, General!" Obi-Wan waved his lightsaber toward the shuttle's twin rear thrusters. "I believe there's some damage to your sublights."
"You're insane. There's no..."
Obi-Wan shrugged. "Show him, Boga." The dragon mount dutifully pointed out the damage with two whistling strikes of her massive tail mace. Wham and wham again, which crumpled the shutter's thruster tubes into crimp-shut knots of metal. Obi-Wan beckoned. "Let's settle this, shall we?" Grievous's answer was a shriek of tortured gyros that wrenched the wheeler upright, and a metal-on-metal scream of blades ripping into deck plates that sent it shooting straight toward the sinkhole wall, and, with the claw arms to help, straight up it. Obi-Wan sighed. "Didn't we just come from there?" Boga coiled herself and sprang for the wall, and the chase was on once more. They raced through the battle, clawing up walls, shooting through tunnels, skidding and leaping, sprinting where the way was clear, and screeching into high-powered serpentines where it was not, whipping around knots of droids and bounding over troopers. Boga ran straight up the side of a clone hover tank and sprang from its turret directly between the high-slanting ring wheels of a hailfire, and a swipe of Obi-Wan's blade left the droid crippled behind them. Native troops had taken the field. Utapauan dragon riders, armed with sparking power lances, charged along causeways, spearing droids on every side. Grievous ran right over anything in his path, the blades of his wheeler shredding droid and trooper and dragon alike. Behind him, Obi-Wan's lightsaber caught and returned blaster bolts in a spray that shattered any droid unwise enough to fire on him. A few stray bolts he batted into the speeding wheeler ahead, but without visible effect. "Fine," he muttered. "Let's try this from a little closer." Boga gained steadily. Grievous's vehicle had the edge in raw speed, but Boga could outturn it and could make instant leaps at astonishing angles. The dragon mount also had an uncanny instinct for where the general might be heading, as well as a seemingly infinite knowledge of useful shortcuts through side tunnels, along sheer walls, and over chasms studded with locked-down wind turbines. Grievous tried once to block Obi-Wan's pursuit by screeching out onto a huge pod that held the whole bank of wind turbines and knocking the blade brakes off them with quick blows of the electrostaff, letting the razor-edged blades spin freely in the constant gale. But Obi-Wan merely brought Boga alongside the turbines and stuck his lightsaber into their whirl. Sliced free chunks of carbo-ceramic blade shrieked through the air and shattered on the stone on all sides. And with a curse, Grievous kicked his vehicle into motion again. The wheeler roared into a tunnel that seemed to lead straight into the rock of the plateau. The tunnel was jammed with ground cars and dragon mounts and wheelers and jetsters and all manner of other vehicles and every kind of